Welcome to Medi-Call episode 213. I'm Corey and here is Daryl.
Yo.
Yo, we have so much to talk about. It's impossible to get it all done in an hour. I think we can do it though. I think we can do the impossible. So go. Now we start. Before we do though, let me just give our sponsor shout out real quick. ManaTraders.com is now the best time to chat about ManaTraders.com, because if you have a sizable collection online that involves some very playable cards, it's likely that you experience the side effects of abandoned restricted update, that being a very painful blow to your collection. Perhaps you had some Uros. That sucks. Sorry. But maybe if you instead were to create an account on ManaTraders.com, then you would feel a lot less sad and sorry about this experience. Use the promo code CardKnockLifePodcast, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at checkout, and let them deal with the problematic ban and restricted pains and woes, and play all of the modern Pioneer and Historic decks to your heart's content. Not Historic, I'm sorry, that's an Arena
Legacy.
Format. Legacy, there you go. But that said, ban and restricted is a big topic this week, is it not?
It is. We have a huge list. I'm just going to bounce format to format and potentially read the reasonings depending on the format. So I'm going to start with Historic. Omnath is banned from Suspended. Omnath, Locus of Creation. Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, is banned. Do we really need to talk about that one, or is it just like extremely painfully obvious? Because to me, it feels extremely painfully obvious.
No, it's extremely painfully obvious.
Yeah, okay. So that one, we're just going to skip over talking about putting the two best blue-green value cards dominated the format. So Pioneer, Balustrade Spy is banned. Teferi, Time Raveler is banned. Undercity Informer is banned. Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath, is banned, and Wilderness Reclamation is banned. So, yeah, their vision. What?
So lots of combo cards.
Yeah, lots of combo cards. Lots of non-interactive stuff. So I'll read the little announcement here. Our vision of Pioneer is to be a collection of the most fun, powerful, and iconic cards and strategies from recent standards. However, there is a divine line between powerful and iconic and overbearing and unfun. In this update, we're addressing several of the cards and strategies we feel across that line that aren't representative of the experience we'd like Pioneer to offer. Uro is just one of the most dominant creatures in Pioneer and is featured in several of the most played and winning decks. Ultimately, the power levels out of line with other cards and strategies in Pioneer. Play data indicates and community feedback supports that the metagame will be more fun and diverse without it. In addition, we're taking this opportunity to ban Teferi, Time Raveler, and Wilderness Reclamation as cards that have previously overstayed their welcome in Standard. Removing Teferi, Time Raveler will have the added benefit of lowering the power level of Nivza Light decks, which are among the most played and winning archetypes. Without Teferi to hold them in check, we're concerned that the metagame share of Wilderness Reclamation decks will rise, so we're choosing to preempt that outcome. Finally, we're seeing a concerning win rate and metagame share for the Oops All Spells deck, which uses Balustrade Spy and Understanding Forward of Villain's Library, having no cards that count as lands. Given the difficulty of interacting with the strategy, it isn't easily held in check by natural metagame forces. We don't believe Pioneer can be at its most fun with Oops All Spells being a part of it, so we're choosing to ban those cards.
Smell you later.
I actually think this is going to be really healthy. Like, Uro was really hard to deal with in Pioneer. There's not a lot of good exile removal. Teferi just kind of made playing control egregiously annoying and difficult. Nobody really liked Wilderness Reclamation. And then Oops All Spells is just a disaster. So I'm kind of glad all that's gone.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge, huge change for that format, which it was long overdue, I think.
Yeah, I love playing Pioneer. Like, Pioneer is super fun to me, and it just was miserable.
Yeah, just before the pandemic, I got to play a couple of paper events in Pioneer because my local game store was running them. And I had been meaning to get out to that for a while, but it's hard to find time for all of these formats. And I had a really good time playing Pioneer. It was just so fun to, like, get dust off some cards that, like, you know, I have fond memories of from Standard's past, but just don't make the cut for Modern. And it was a blast. I did play Niv to Light, I will say. So I think that the Teferi ban is justified, and I think that that deck is still going to be very good.
I think
five
so too.
Colors and all of the best cards is just nice.
Yeah, two hits on it with Uro and Teferi is going to be nice. I just love playing Sphinx's Revelation, so anything that can give me a reason to dust off the old Sphinx's Revelation is great, and Teferi, Time Raveler being banned is a big plus for those decks. So I am a huge fan. So modern, Field of the Dead is banned. Mystic Sanctuary is banned. Simeon's Spirit Guide is banned. Praise Jesus. Oh my God. Took them, what, 20 years, it feels like? Yeah. Tybalt's Trickery is banned. And Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath is banned. So for that, as in Pioneer, Uro has been a dominant fixture across many top modern decks and operates at a power level difficult for other mid-range control strategies to compete with. To open space in the metagame for a greater variety of those strategies or slower decks to exist, we're banning Uro. Along with Uro, we're addressing two land cards frequently played by ramp and control strategies that we feel are decreasing diversity of gameplay patterns, Field of the Dead and Mystic Sanctuary. Both create repetitive and non-interactive game states in the late game for relatively low cost. To promote more back-and-forth gameplay and interaction over win conditions, we're choosing to remove them. So basically they're saying there that the low cost of having three island-type lands or seven lands with different names in your deck to just, like, passively generate value by, like, playing lands and getting your spell, like, powerful spells back, like Cryptic Command, or generating enough 2/2s that your opponent has to just have infinite removal, which isn't possible, creates more space for other late-game win conditions to kind of make a resurgence, like Planeswalkers and things like that. So yeah. I would agree with that. It's about time that I personally hate Field of the Dead, Mystic Sanctuary. I've been okay with, but I can see how decks like the Uro Time Warp deck that, you know, Uro is banned, but Omnath is Time Warp and Renin 6 and all that is just a mess. So, yeah, I can see why we're getting rid of this card. Simeon Spirit Guide is a card we've had our eye on for some time as an enabler that speeds up fast combo decks. As the modern card pool has grown, so too is the capability for decks to assemble early game-winning combinations from hand, with some recent examples including Oops All Spells, Charbelcher Variants, and some recent builds of the Tybalt's Trickery deck. To slow down that category of combo decks as a whole and give opponents more time to set up interactive plays in the early game, Simeon Spirit Guide is banned. They could have done this years ago. thank God they finally did it. I've ranted about this infinite times. You guys are probably sick of hearing me talk about it. I don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, this one caught me off guard, but I'm definitely happy to see it go. This leaves a few fast mana spells in Modern still, though, and there's some like kind of oddballs.
Like Mox Amber. That's
Mox Amber.
But that's not fast mana. You actually have to have a legendary creature. So you have to invest mana to get mana.
Yes, but you know that something's going to pop up one day and it's like, it's going to make that card abusable. And it's like, I almost feel like a preemptive ban is in line at some point, because when it happens, it's just going to completely wreck the format until the ban and restricted update, which is going to be so obvious, shows up. So I don't know. In order to like just keep things consistent, I would just go ahead and just like ban all of them, right?
I mean, you're never going to hear me complain about it personally. That one I think has enough hoops that you can leave it and be fine.
All right. Anyways,
And last one. Finally, while there's been much discussion about new Tybalt's Trickery decks in several formats, we see Modern as the format where those decks are uniquely problematic via Tybalt's Trickery's interaction with Cascade. While the overall win rate of the deck hasn't shown to be problematic, we believe it contributes to non-games that make Modern less fun to play. As the goal of this update is to shake up the metagame into a more fun spot, we're concerned that a continued metagame presence of Tybalt's Trickery decks would work against the goal. Therefore, we are banning Tybalt's Trickery.
Yes, and notably, on a related note, they have changed the cascade rules so that you can now cascade into Valky and then get a Tybalt on the back.
Yeah,
so more Tybalt changes. Yeah, I know, I'll jump into it because I think it's mostly it mostly pertains to Modern in this case.
Yeah.
But we did it. I have been memeing on Tybalt for years, and finally we have two BNR updates that address Tybalt cards today. So
took you long
it
enough,
came man. It came true, and it only took like a damn week and a half for it to happen. It was
yeah. I'm gonna read Legacy because I enjoy Legacy too. Oak Thief of Crowns, Arcan Astrolabe, Dreadhorde Arcanist are all banned. Oko is just an egregious card. It turns off a lot of unexpected threats and defense. Like Chalice of the Void is like a big card that mono brown or red Blood Moon decks and things like that play to beat up on Brainstorm decks. Well, Brainstorm decks just have a free out and play an Oko. You can Oko their Chalice, and it no longer counters your one drops. So, like, that's a big play pattern that's a mess. And then just having Oko backed up by Force of Will and Daze and things like that out of Delver decks is disastrous. It's just, like, an unbeatable threat sometimes. Astrolabe made people no longer have to pick between having greedy mana bases and losing to Wasteland and Blood Moon. So, like, you just, like, Wasteland is kind of like this defining card of Legacy, and so to like just basically functionally make it not exist because you can play Snow Basics and play this Astrolabe card that's really, really strong, just invalidated a whole section of strategies. So they just took Astrolabe away. And then Dreadhorde Arcanist is just one of the best tempo strategy cards because of how many one mana cantrips there are, like Brainstorm and Ponder and Preordain. Things like Lightning Bolt floating around there too, Thoughtseize. There's too many good one drop spells, and most Legacy decks are packed to the gills with them. So Dreadhorde Arcanist is going to just generate a ton of card advantage in tempo. They decided not to ban Uro because 3 and 4 mana spells in Legacy have a really high hurdle as to what they have to do. And Uro is really a 7 mana spell if you're going to have it stay in play. And then the land corrupts, just totally hoses you.
Yeah.
So, like, Uro is not too broken in Legacy. So.
Right.
And then the last thing that matters here is the Cascade rules change. So they changed the rule 702.84A. Cascade is a triggered ability that functions only while the spell with Cascade is on the stack. Cascade means when you cast a spell, exile the cards from the top of your library until you can exile a non-land whose converted mana cost is less than this spell's converted mana cost. You may cast that spell without paying its mana cost if its converted mana cost is less than this spell's converted mana cost. Then put all the exiled cards this way that weren't cast in the bottom of your library in a random order. So the line that was added is pretty obvious. You may cast this spell without paying its mana cost if its converted mana cost is less than this spell's converted mana cost. So the problem with that is when you cascade into Valky, you used to be able to cast Tybalt because that line that said less than this spell's converted mana cost wasn't there. So now they put that in and the game goes, well, is 7 less than 3? No, you can't cast the Tybalt side. You can still cast the Valky side.
Yep, nope, nope. Okay, that's cool. So yeah, carrying on. Because I know people have heard plenty about the BNR update already, and everyone's got their thoughts on it.
We're excited, I think, overall. Like, we talked about what the cards are. We read the announcement. And, let's just give our overall feelings, and then because we don't need to analyze, did they get it right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Zillions of people have did that, including Bros. I'm fucking excited. I'm going to swear, and we're going to put the explicit tag on the screen. I'm super fucking excited about this. Like, all these formats. Like, I just haven't played Magic in months. Even Commander, because like I don't have people around to play Commander with. I didn't really want to play it online, but like all the competitive formats just were egregiously boring to me because, or of Uro or various different things like Modern's impressive combo decks, Teferi and things like that, and Pioneer. Like it just was miserable for me, and so like to have new breath of life in all these formats makes me want to fire up MTGO again, like play some Magic.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
What about you?
I am also excited. I mean, I have a hard time thinking that the historic bans are going to change much about the format, because while that deck was a big part of the metagame, it was only one of the like most annoying pieces of historic, and I don't think that historic was necessarily in a terrible place before that, to be honest with you. And maybe my sample size wasn't large enough for me to just be offended by it, but I guess like if I'm thinking of historic, I'm thinking of like my feel bads with like Muxus and stuff. So I'm not saying they should have done more. I didn't even like really expect a ban related to historic at this point, except for the fact that they were like, yeah, Uro's getting banned in like every format imaginable. So that's fine.
Yeah,
but I guess I'm happy to see that Uro is going, because it's just a crutch, you know. Like I think mid range strategies can be so diverse, and they allow you to play so many cool cards that the fact that like Uro existed, it was just like, you know, might as well play blue green because it's just the best thing you can be doing. Don't try to fight it. Just play the damn card. Don't try to be cute or creative or clever. Just play Uro, right? And so now that it's gone, it's like now people have to like, you know, be a little bit more imaginative about what they're doing. And ultimately, it's probably some kind of green and black strategy anyway.
Sure.
Or green and blue strategy anyway.
I just always make the statement, especially for formats like Pioneer. Pioneer, the measuring stick for me is Siege Rhino. It always has been and always will be. If Siege Rhino is a playable Magic card in Pioneer, Pioneer is in a healthy place.
Yeah.
And I think this update definitely puts Siege Rhino in a place where you can cast Siege Rhino and not look like an idiot.
That's fair.
And that to me is like very exciting for that format. But like, yeah, I'm just overall totally excited and jazzed to play Magic again.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were talking off the cast. I think I might dust off the old Modern cards. It's been some time since I played Modern. You know, we've been around the format obviously since we've been doing this podcast. But I haven't played a whole lot of Modern, but I'm interested to kind of delve back into that format. It looks like a lot of fun. There's a lot of stuff going on in Modern. And as a transition piece here, as I was going through the results from our previous spoiler game from Zendikar Rising, I'm finding so much diversity kind of, you know, aside from like the obvious players in the format, there are a few cards that just keep showing up in many, many of the decks and a lot of themes that show up. There's a lot of just like variable parts in a lot of those decks that people are really having some, you know, ability to express themselves through. And so a lot of these cards that we picked, like I was pleasantly surprised at our accuracy with Zendikar Rising, because we picked an awful lot of new cards to show up in Modern and Pioneer decks. And we were pretty damn close with a lot of them. There are only a few of them that we actually lost points on.
Wow.
But rather than like going through all of those results, I just want to generally say that I kicked Daryl's ass.
You did.
With our Zendikar Rising picks. So we're at 2-2 now. We're dead even. Yeah, the score is tied. I think it's primarily because of the flip cards, and I think Daryl didn't believe in those prior to the Oops All Spells decks being a thing.
Yeah. Like, I even made the comment, like, if you go back and listen to those shows, I'm sure I made the comment 100 times. Like, if there's some stupid broken combo deck like Oops All Spells, these will all see play. Like, every one of them, every color will all see play.
Yeah.
And, like, I made that comment. I was like, if I lose because this happens, I lose. But, like, the front side of the card by itself isn't a good enough of a card to, like, see play. Like, and most of those cards have never seen the light of day on the front side is the thing. So it's like, yeah, it sees play because it's a land, it's not a land.
Yeah.
Okay. Technical rules of Magic issue got me, and I predicted that ahead of time, and I lost, and I totally lost it.
Now, to be fair, though, actually, a lot of them are showing up in other places, too. So, like, for example, we both picked Glasspool Mimic, and Glasspool Mimic is showing up in a lot of, like, Bant creature decks both formats.
Right, so I picked the ones that had a relevant front side, mm-hmm. and then there was minor upside to the backside being a link.
Right. Well, and then, like, consider, like, the red versions. There's, like, Shatterskull Smashing and Spikefield Hazard, both of which are showing up in, like, Modern, like, red-green, like, rampy decks and, like, Pioneer, like, red, like, Prowess-style decks. So there's a lot of application for these cards outside of the combo, like you said. But and I think that we identified that correctly because you were in on those. But I do think that at the point that we got to red, we were both aware of the Oops All Spells. I was like, okay, has a land on the backside? We're going to play it.
Yep.
Anyways, a couple of surprises to me. The biggest one, we both picked Morog for Pioneer, and we were both wrong on that one.
Is that the big dumb trampley guy that...
Get extra your combat phases, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Surprised that wasn't good.
Not a hit. Glasspool Mimic did show up quite a bit. I was thinking after doing the podcast, I was really high on that one. I was calling that one like the Luris of the set, and I still really like that card. It certainly didn't, you know, pan out to be that powerful.
No, that award goes to Skyclave Apparition.
Yeah, Skyclave Apparition for sure. And we both picked that in Modern and Pioneer, so we were accurate with that. But Glasspool Mimic is showing up quite a bit more. Looking back now, like a couple months later, like it is showing up a lot. And it's showing up a lot in some strange places where these decks aren't already like established archetypes. Usually it's like one or two ofs, but it's, you know, it's there. So kind of in the spots that we described.
I mean, maybe you could actually call Omnath Locus of Creation the Luris of the set, but...
Yeah,
it's one of those two.
Both of those two made a big splash in both those two
huge,
we picked for both formats. So. Yeah. Okay, anyways, I think we need to go on because we're going to try to wrap up our Kaldheim picks today. We've done all of the other colors. We're on to green, gold, artifact, and land, and I think we can finish it off in the last 40 minutes or so we've got. The previous picks in the previous podcast, obviously go back the last 2 weeks and check those out if you're curious, but we're on to green. And we're going to start things off with Battle Mammoth. Battle Mammoth is the 5-mana 6/5 Effluent. It is a mythic. It has trample. And whenever a permanent you control becomes a target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card. It also has foretell to green-green.
I think this is just good enough to be a generic giant beater in Historic. Like, it fights with the slot of Elder Gargoth.
Yeah.
And so Elder Gargoth, I think, is just better stats-wise for Modern. And Itzy's play, Battle Mammoth kind of only being card draw, not producing additional tokens or whatever. Less so, I think, for Modern, but I think it can see play in Historic as like your other big top end beater in your random red green stompy deck or mono green elf deck. Like you're like play a one drop, play a three drop, play a bunch of three drops. Like this thing, you can, if you have like the weird turns where you like Land War Elf, and you don't have a second forest, you can like, or third forest, you can like suspend this or put it on layaway at some point and then just like have a 4 mana 6/5 to fit into your curve wherever you want to fit it in. It makes the killing of your elves really awkward in the mid game when you put it into play. I think all in all, this is a hit for Historic.
Okay, yeah, clearly not Modern, right? We're in agreement on that.
I think Gargoth is just better in every way for Modern.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. And in full disclosure, we had a practice episode on Monday that, due to some technical difficulties, we rescheduled for today.
Let's be honest. I got sick. We all got sick. There's no technical difficulties.
All right. Well, technical. Yes, that's technical. Yeah. So we did talk about this one, and we both picked it for Historic. But now you just mentioned Elder Gargoth, and that brings up a really good point because that's kind of like your 5-mana like value engine in green, and it's just better than Battle Mammoth. I mean, if at best you're going to get like one card out of it, I'd rather have an Elder Gargoth. So I think that that might be a good reason to pick that one over this guy because, I mean, right, like, is this really going to like give you much more value than just being targeted itself and drawing a card?
Maybe. Probably not, in all honesty. Like, you have to have something scarier than this.
Yeah, so I think I'll actually pass on this one, surprisingly. It's an extremely powerful card.
Like, now that I brought up Elder Gargoth, I don't even want... Yeah, I'm going to pass. I was going to stick with what I had the other day, but, like, now that I brought up Elder Gargoth, this card just doesn't even cut the mustard for me, I don't think. Like, yeah. I would have to be playing 4 Elder Gargoth and then need, like... And then I have to ask myself, is this better than Nissim Shakes the World?
And then the foretell doesn't do it for me, right? That's not enough of an addition.
I mean, even the text box, is that text box better than Nissim Shakes the World
in your green deck? No.
It can't. I think the answer is absolutely not. Yeah. So yeah, I think this is not good enough now that we've gotten through a practice set run.
Okay, but it's a nuts card. Like, I have to be clear about that. It's an insane card. Yeah.
And if it sees play, we'll just go, yeah, we had it. And then we talk ourselves out of it with Elder Gargoth. Yeah. I feel like it only fits in mono green decks. And I think the quality of creatures in that range, 5, 6, 7, I kind of look at all in the same range when it comes to those green decks, is just too high in both formats to facilitate this guy to be in effect.
Okay, let me put it this way, and I think you'd agree with this. If someone plays this card in their deck and they place in a tournament, I think we'd probably both look at it and be like, oh, that seems fine, right? It seems like a good plan.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
But they probably should just be playing Elder Gargoth, right?
I mean, I think we agree on that, yeah. Okay. Like, I wouldn't look at the deck and go, they're an idiot, but I would look at the deck and go, why did they not pick Elder Gargoth? And then if they had an explanation, I would be like, oh, okay.
Okay. All right. So let's go on then. Blizzard Brawl is up next. It's an uncommon. It's a snow sorcery for 1 green. It says choose target creature you control and target creature you don't control. If you control 3 or more snow permanents, the creature you control gets +1/+0 and gains indestructible until end of turn. Those creatures fight. We talked about this one in our practice episode. This is about as far as we got. But this one is the play on the stock 1-mana green fight spell, but this one is extremely is just like way more playable in that it can give your creature indestructible. If you're having a creature fight, you're going to usually be putting like a couple of points of damage on it so that you can't really attack afterwards, because then the creature typically will die from combat afterwards. So to power it up and then fight, it's like you not only get the advantage of like being able to safely attack, but you also can then, you know, add an extra point of damage to the dome if they have no blockers after the fight.
Also, but lets you fight something that's a little bigger that your creature might die.
Yeah, you can upgrade.
You can fight like a 3/3 can fight a 4/4. So like, or you can fight another 3/3 and not die.
Yeah, or they play like a 5-drop and you only have a 4-drop in a Blizzard Brawl. Like, usually you can just like tag the two together and be like, oh no, this is like as good as a 5-drop now.
Yeah. So here's my question.
Yeah.
Does the 1-mana fight variant see play in either format?
No, it doesn't. But this is a lot better though.
I mean, just like, let's look at the benchmark here. Yeah. Is the 1-mana fight spell good enough?
I don't know. I think that I am too unfamiliar with the mono green stompy deck to answer that question accurately, but probably not.
So, like, in modern, it's like Vines of Vestwood and the other Hexproof one. I don't know about historic, but, like, I'm going to assume for my sake mentally, I look at these cards and I go, those are great for limited. And that's kind of where my checkbox ends. And so, like, if the mono green card isn't good enough for the mono green deck, like, it's not going to see play. And I don't think this is enough of an upgrade to make it see play.
Yeah, that's fair.
Still interested? You on our practice episode, you were in for historic.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to take it for historic. I think it's a very good card. And I think that this is kind of one of those cases like Village Rites where it's like they've been trying and trying and trying. And finally, they found the right formula and it's just good enough now. So it's not Village Rites, but it's a good card. So we're going to try it for historic.
Okay, I got the next one pulled up. Elvish Wall Master.
Yeah.
So 2-mana, 2/2 elf warrior, rare. When one or more other elves enters the battlefield under your control, create a 1/1 green elf warrior token creature token. This ability triggers only once each turn. Very important, otherwise he would just make infinite elves by himself. 5 green elves you control gain +2/+2 and death touch until end of turn.
This guy just seems like a little bit too demanding to be like playable. Like if he was like a one drop
not,
that did
some not playable in modern, I don't think at all.
I don't think he's playable in historic either.
I just don't know historic good enough to be able to make a judgment there.
Yeah, I would rather play like Dwinin's Elite or whatever the Dwinin guy is that puts an elf into play when he comes into play. And it like that card seems like it doesn't have the pump function, but Allosaurus Shepherd or whatever that guy's called does, and I don't think you need this guy to do
right. Yeah, the thought is just like this guy has to live multiple turns to be better than a Dwinin's Elite, so he has to make it one turn past when he comes into play to be equal to a Dwinin's Elite, and you have to play a spell, and then he has to make it two turns past the turn he came into play to be better than a Dwinin's Elite, and you had to play two spells. I think that's too high of a bar, and I think as far as pump goes,
awful. He's got the
if
worst
Zuri Renegade Leader exists in that format, this card is unplayable.
It doesn't. But the Allosaurus guy does. The one
I don't
drop,
know what that guy does.
He's the guy
from Legacy. The Jumpstart guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Then this card is wholly unplayable. Get it out of here.
Yeah.
Next please.
Yeah, this I mean +2/+2 and Death Touch, like that's a pretty terrible pairing for seven.
The Death Touch is terrible. Why Death Touch? Get it out of here.
Okay, anyways, we're passing in both formats. Azika, God of the Tree, is a flip god. It is 1 green for 1/4 vigilance. Tap to add 1 green mana of any color. Other legendary creatures you control have vigilance and tap to add 1 mana of any color.
One green mana of any color?
What, did I say that?
Yeah, you did. Oh,
sorry, add 1 mana of any color. On the backside, it is the Prismatic Bridge. It is Wooburg for a legendary enchantment. Beginning of your upkeep, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a creature or planeswalker card. Put that card onto the battlefield and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order.
This card has to enable some sort of shenanigans, right? Like,
I mean, you could always hit another Azika with it, so there's always that, you know, that fail.
Yeah. The fail state, yeah.
Yeah, but the you know, the thing it can do is it can be, like, a really good mana dork for, like, a Niv to Light deck in Historic, and I think that's where I like it. So I'm going to pick it for Historic.
Yeah, this is insane in Historic. I'm just trying to think of, like, is this playable in Modern? And I don't think the answer is yes. I have to read Bring to Light.
Oh, Bring to Light can get this, can't it?
Okay, so this is kind of where they change the cascade rule. You can bring, if you pay 5, you can bring to light for the creature and cast the backside.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, don't think this is good enough for Niv to Light in Modern, though, because, like,
there's
not a lot. I mean, like, you're casting Bring to Light, and you're basically trying to hit Niv-Mizzet at that point, because there's not very many creatures in the Bring to Light deck. So, like, it's either you hit, like, Niv-Mizzet or Renit 6. Or this thing.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm good on that.
Okay, all right, Historic it is. You picking it for Historic.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right, let's keep moving then. Azika's Chariot is up next. It is 3 green for a legendary artifact vehicle. It is a 4/4. When it enters the battlefield, create 2/2 green cat tokens. When it attacks, create a token that's a copy of target token you control, and it has crew for. So it can crew itself with its own tokens, it can copy its own tokens, and it's just like some value, you know? It kind of feels like a planeswalker.
Yeah, this seems really good.
It seems some plain standard.
Like the issue is that, like, I don't think this is a modern playable, remotely even.
No.
I don't think this is historic playable either, because may just be my ignorance. What green token deck is there?
There's not, but there's a green white. There is a green white value deck.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I don't think this is good enough.
So, yeah, probably not. I'm just trying to look to see if they're already playing this in those decks. I don't see it. It's a cool card, but let's keep moving. Okay, next up is In Search of Greatness.
Whoa.
And this card is strange. It is green for an enchantment. It's a rare. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may cast a permanent spell from your hand with converted mana cost equal to 1 plus the highest converted mana cost among other permanents you control without paying its mana cost. If you don't, scry 1. If you don't, scry 1 is pretty good.
I mean, like, I would pay 2 mana for scry 1 on my upkeep. We paid 3 mana in Thassa.
Yeah.
And it had this other effect that it could randomly sometimes be a 5/5. Is it, like, cast a spell for free? Like, a really good upside? Like, on the level of Thassa? Like,
yeah.
I think this is playable in both formats. In all honesty, I'm going to buy for both formats. This just seems like an insanely powerful card that can absolutely be broken. And again, I haven't played Magic in so long. My brain just doesn't have it in me to know exactly what it is that's going to do that yet. But damn, this seems breakable.
I don't know. Like, if you could, like, put a Tybalt into play at 2 mana, like you probably could last week. I mean, that would have worked, right?
I mean, I'm even just thinking about it, like, play this on 2 and just put a 3-drop into play.
It says other permanents, yeah.
Oh, that's an important line of text. Oh, okay. I'm going to retract my statement because I missed the word other there.
The mana cost is a little bit restrictive. Like, green seems to imply that it's probably like a mono green or like a heavy green splash X deck.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what exists that can do that.
Well, see, this is why I was thinking of it for like some sort of like Malira type deck. You could like cheat your Finks into play and like cast your other two things.
Yeah.
But it doesn't check itself.
No.
Okay, I don't think I'm going to buy this. This feels powerful and historic because you can still put it. I'm just not going to buy it for either format. I've talked about it. Missing the word other was very important here. If it didn't have the word other, this would be a card for both formats.
Yeah, it does. It says you may cast rather than just puts it into play too, so it can be countered. Yeah. I'm going to pick it for historic. I think this is a potential sideboard card for like the green-based creature deck, such as like maybe elves could experiment with this. I don't think you're going to see it a lot, but it's going to be a possibility for elves when they are getting board wiped. And yeah, just like a Search for Azcanta, or like maybe you just, I don't know, you certainly don't want to be like using it to put creatures into play in that deck, but I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe it's not very good. All right, screw it. I'm out.
Yeah,
but this is
one of those cards that I could see like seeing both play in both formats, and that's just being wrong about and going, okay, we missed that application.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, it's a really good card. Like, don't get me wrong, it's a good card.
Okay.
This can cheat Eldrazi triggers or like cast triggers if that's what you're doing, but like obviously getting a permanent that big in play is very hard. So, a thought.
Okay, Jorn, God of Winter, is next. It's a rare, it's a god, it's 2 and a green for a 3/3 legendary snow creature. When it attacks, untap each snow permanent you control. So that includes snowlands, snow basics.
You?
On the back side, it is Kaldring the Rhyme Staff, which is 1 blue-black for a legendary snow artifact. That's 3 mana. You may tap it. You may play target snow permanent card from your graveyard this turn. If you do, it enters the battlefield tapped. So you may play. So you can play a land, since it doesn't say like cast.
This card has got to be playable in historic. Period.
Yeah, I wonder if it's got modern possibilities too, though, because modern's more likely to be able to capitalize on these color combinations along with Snowlands with like Ice Fang Coatl. So,
oh yeah, you can cast Ice Fangs from your graveyard.
Yeah, and that guy is known to die a lot.
And having multiple copies of this card, is it bad? Because you play the first one as the staff.
Yeah.
And you can cast the copies that have died. And if you get to untap with this guy, like you tap your staff, you play Ice Fang, you attack, you untap your staff and your lands. Mm-hmm. And then like if they block and kill it, you just tap your staff and replay it.
Yeah.
Like it's like having a Sword of Feast and Famine on an attack. Like this is a really good card. I think it's playable in both formats. I think I've convinced myself that like someone will try and figure out like a snow permanent like deck, like a snow deck that this can play in and like be useful and like have a critical mass of snow permanents that will like, well, you'll get enough value off of to do this.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm gonna pick it in both formats too. I'm not super optimistic about Modern, but I really want it to be good in Modern, because how fun would it be to have like a snow creature company deck with Ice Fang and Jorn and friends and
yeah, like what snow creatures are in this format that like they're coming out in this set that might be good enough for this? Like, how can we get snow permanents in here? Does it say snow permanent or so snow smell? Because it's spell.
No, snow gets the permanent.
Oh, it says permanent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, not snow spell. Sorry.
I was about to say, if it says snow spell, you could get stuff like your Blizzard Brawl and things like that as repeatable removals, which would be really cool. But
yeah, I do think this is the only snow permanent in this set that's really worth playing in those Modern decks. But I might have overlooked something.
It's possible.
Thinking back. Oh, there is that land there, you know, that we'll talk about that land later on, but there's a land that can man land up for 3 mana that would probably make the cut. Moving on, we have Kolvori, God of Kinship, 2 green for a legendary creature god, 2/4. As long as you control 3 or more legendary creatures, Kolvori gets +4/+2, becomes a 6/6, in other words. Pay 1 and a green, tap it, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal a legendary creature card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So,
how much mana was that?
4 for a 6/6 if you
the ability.
Oh, 1 and a green.
I just think that's too steep of a requirement to make it a 6/6.
But there's a backside, though, so because it's a flip. And it's 1 and a green for a legendary artifact. When it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. You can tap it to add a green, spend this mana only to cast a creature spell of the chosen type or a legendary creature spell. So a very efficient mana rock for the creatures of the type of your choice.
I don't think it's good enough.
I don't think so either. I think we can move on. Okay. But it's a cool card and I thought I'd bring it up.
I got Old Growth Troll.
Yeah. Need to do one before you do that one. And I forgot to put on the list, but this is important. You want to read, can you see Masked Vandal?
I do not see Masked Vandal. I'm on the spreadsheet, not on the...
That was my bad. Masked Vandal is a common, but going in alphabetical order, that comes next.
Yeah.
1 and a green for a 1/3 shapeshifter, so it's a changeling. When it enters the battlefield, you may exile a creature card from your graveyard. If you do, exile target artifact or enchantment and opponent controls.
Exile? That's very good.
Exile.
How much? 1 and a green, you said?
2 mana. Yeah, it's a 2 mana Reclamation Sage if you exile a creature from your graveyard.
It's a human.
Yeah, it's a human. It's an elf. Ugh. It's a spirit. It's everything.
Ugh, gross. Yeah, this card's 100% seen playing both formats.
Yeah.
Ugh, I'm disgusted.
It's a common. Did I say that?
Yeah. Hey, it's not a $10 card. I'm okay with that part.
Yeah, so I'm picking this in both formats too. It's tough because you need that exile disenchant situation like pretty much like on a dime usually, and when you have to like have the clause of, you know, there's creatures in my graveyard, it can be kind of tricky sometimes. So this does not deal with Rest in Peace very well, for example.
No.
There's some cases where you really are like, oh, why did I play this over Reclamation Sage or Knight of Autumn or something. So
right.
It's not strictly better.
But the decks that are in that boat, no. And so they don't play it. But like,
or they don't care, you know.
Or they they do care because they want to get rid of the, like, that's what I'm saying. The decks that want to play that effect that need to be like Rest in Peace, they know that, and so they don't play this card.
Okay.
But like decks that want this to fit in their tribe, like humans, like most of the time you're gonna kill a human somewhere along the way.
Yeah.
So, like, totally going to be fine. Yeah, that card's insane.
Yep. Okay, Old Growth Troll.
Old Growth Troll. Green, green for a creature, troll, warrior, 4/4. Trample. When it dies, if it was a creature, return to the battlefield. It's an aura enchantment with enchant forest you control. An enchanted forest has add green, green. And pay one, sacrifice this land, create a tapped 4/4 green troll warrior creature token with trample.
Pick it for historic, not for modern. Yep. Mono green, stompy, and historic.
Yeah, this is just like an extra 4/4 body. You know, they're better green size creatures, and I don't think you're gonna like. I don't think that the second 4/4 is gonna be. The second 4/4 might be relevant in modern. But does green stompy just have better creatures? And I think the answer is yes.
Like it's so easy to say that all these good green cards show up in green stompy, but green stompy's not a deck. Like the last time I saw green stompy place was never, I don't know, years. Yeah. I have to stop evaluating cards in that way for modern. So I'm going to pass on it there.
Yep.
The next one is Realmwalker, 2 and a green for a 2/3 shapeshifter with changeling. Enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. You can look at the top card of your library at any time. You can cast creature spells of the chosen type from the top of your library. It's Snoop for any
both
tribe.
Formats.
Yeah, both formats. In fact, it's already seen play in Elves in both formats, so it's no surprise.
I was about to say, this is just a sideboard card for humans, in my opinion. Like, now that, like, control decks and mid-range decks with card advantage are back on the menu,
yeah,
like, this is your bailout to it. It's like, all right, Cavern, Human, Realmwalker, Human...
Yeah.
Play humans off the top of my library and bury you in humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Like this card is an insane. It's possibly a main boardable card. I don't know how if humans is in the market for being more resilient in that way, game one, but it's certainly a sideboard card if they need to be more resilient.
Okay. All right. Toski, Bearer of Secrets. 3 and a green for a 1/1 legendary creature, Squirrel. Can't be countered. Indestructible. Attacks each turn if able. When a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card.
This has got to be playable in one of these formats.
Yeah. I mean,
it's just a 1/1 indestructible. I mean, I guess you could just block it forever, and so it would never draw a card.
Yes.
Because, like, I'm trying to think of, like, can you play this in a control deck? Like, can you take a turn off and play a 4-mana 1/1 that basically is a Howling Mine if you connect with it?
Yeah, and then just Wrath. Like, it survives the Wraths. So, I'm picking it for Historic. I don't know about Modern. It's a little too costly.
I think for Historic, it's certainly good because it plays in creature decks. And it's whatever a creature you control. So, like, Elf-style decks. Like, this is something that could see play in humans. Even though, like, it's not an elf. Or elves. In humans. In elves. Because even though it's not an elf, like, having basically a Biden of Thassa.
Yeah.
Is pretty good. So any green deck can play Biden with Thassa now, and it's indestructible. So it's like, this is a very solid card for those decks. So
yes. Yep.
I just think that 4-mana might be a little too much for modern, but I would not be surprised to see it get tested.
Yeah, I'm picking this one for Commander as well.
Oh, good God. I will pick it 100 times for Commander.
By the way, I picked up this is one of the few.
Copy?
Yeah, one of the few. Okay. Tyvar Kell, 2 green for a legendary planeswalker Tyvar. He is an elf walker. 3 loyalty. He has a static ability. Elves you control have tap to add a black to your mana pool. +1, put a +1/+1 counter on up to one target elf, untap it, it gains death touch until end of turn. What's up with all these elves having death touch these days? 0 loyalty. Create a 1/1 green elf warrior token. In -6, you get an emblem with whenever you cast an elf spell, it gains haste until end of turn, and you draw 2 cards.
No. It's not good enough. Like, the emblem is busted. But, the rest of the text on the card is so irrelevant.
Yeah, the emblem lets you just go off elf ball.
Yeah.
Like automatically, right?
Yeah.
That would be so fun. But... yeah, I don't know about this guy. Kind of boring. I'll pass on him. And then last but not least is Vorinclex Monstrous Raider. And Vorinclex, we all know about this guy. 4 green for 6/6. Trample haste. Mythic Praetor. Phyrexian Praetor. If you would put up 1 or more counters on a permanent or player, put twice that many If an opponent would put one or more counters on a permanent or player, they put half that many, rounded down.
So I know what this card does. I don't think it's seen play in either format.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I think it's good, but I don't know what it does. It's just like what it does for any specific deck. So I think I will pass on this one as well.
Yeah. All right. Buy 1,000 of them for Commander.
Yeah, it'll be good for Commander. Okay. Shall we try to get the gold done?
Let's just bang it all out. There's only a few things left.
All right. Battle for Bretgaard. Let me see if this one's worth talking about. Battle for Bretgaard. Blah, 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 blah. No, skip it. Screw that one. That one's bad.
Read it.
It's not even worth it. Battle of Frost and Fire, though. This is 5 mana, 3 blue red for a saga. First chapter, it deals 4 damage to each non-giant creature and each planeswalker. Second chapter, scry 3. Third chapter, whenever you cast a spell with converted mana cost 5 or greater this turn, draw 2 cards, then discard a card.
Okay, so the Saga 3 is the most relevant thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. I mean, the first one's a Wrath, right?
Yeah.
So I think that one's, I think this one's good for Historic, and I think we can,
yeah,
we can probably
move. Yeah, I don't think it's good for Modern.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's good for Historic.
All right, let's...
So, like, let's say, really, you're going to get a Wrath, you're going to get a Scry 3, and then you're probably going to activate the third Saga once, because you're going to play, like, a Planeswalker and draw cards.
No doubt. Okay, moving on to Binding of the Old Gods. This one's seeing quite a bit of play in Standard here. 2 black green for a saga, once again. Chapter 1 is destroy a target non-land permanent and opponent controls. It starts off with a bang. Chapter 2 is search a library for a forest card, put it onto the battlefield tapped. It just says forest, by the way, so you can find a shockland if you wish. You can find a Murmuring Bosque if you wish. And then chapter 3 is creatures you control gain death touch until end turn. What?
Why? Why is that the end of this saga? I do not understand. Like,
well, you can
you
find a dry
arbor. If you're binding the old gods, like, give me something decent. Like, don't give me death touch. Give me, like, make a 6/6 or reanimate a creature or something.
Yeah, I think this is a good one to blink, obviously, right? So you can blink and, like, pick off.
This is something you want to Yorion about 100,000 times.
Yeah. So this one is going to be a hit for Niv decks, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Death's Delight will definitely enjoy playing.
But I think that it's got a chance in Modern, too, and I don't know where or how, but it's good. I mean, it's 4 mana, it's expensive, but it does a lot.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly Historic playable. I'm going to pass on it for Modern. Are you taking it for Modern?
Yeah, I am. I think that it's just got to make the cut in Modern somewhere. I don't understand where. Maybe there's like a green-black, like an Abzan Scape Shifty deck. I know that we're missing now Field of the Dead, but, you know, I think something can be done. Okay, Free Raja's Retribution. This one's kind of cool. 1 white-white-black for a saga. First chapter is create a 4/4 white angel warrior with flying and vigilance. Already pretty good, right? On cost there. 2, until end of turn, angels you control gain tap. Destroy target creature with power less than this creature's power. Nice. Chapter 3, angels you control gain double strike until end of turn.
Again, like, great start, pretty damn good middle, terrible finish. The Norse have terrible endings to all of their stories.
Well,
all of them.
Yeah, I mean, they front load these sagas. This is a different approach to sagas, and I think that's on purpose. I think the idea is that we're going to do the best thing first now.
Sure. I'm just making fun of the Norse mythology, and their stories have terrible endings.
I mean, yeah, but double strike, that's pretty glorious, right?
Yeah, it requires you to have an angel in play to matter.
Yeah, sure.
So, like, Saga 1's just good, but you just kind of remove all the efficacy if you kill the angel. So, like, this has to be in, like, a tribal angels deck.
Sure.
It's just not good enough for me in either format.
All right.
Again, another nice blinkable for your Nymph of Light deck, but just not good enough for me.
I'm picking it for Historic. I think that the Doom Foretold decks are going to be interested.
Okay, yeah.
All right. Herald, King of Skemphar. We're going to... let's do this one real quick. 1 black green for a 3/2 legendary creature elf warrior with menace. Enters the battlefield, look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal an elf warrior or Tyvar card from among them and put in your hand.
Well, this is why all the elves do green and black things, but just not quite good enough.
Yeah. The question is, like, does this dig enough to, you know, supplant? Is that
the word I'm for? Pay one more mana to cast Collected Company.
Right, in both formats. So I think that
you pass on this game. Or feed the Stampede for the same price.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. The next one though is a real deal. Invasion of the Giants, and this one is seeing play in Modern as well, because of the fact that Primetime is a giant. So I'll give you that free information if you're unaware of what's going on in that format.
I mean, I'm 100% not.
Blue and red. It's a saga. It just seems very like strange to think of it that way, but it's happening. First chapter is Scry 2. The second chapter is draw a card. Then you may reveal a giant card from your hand. When you do, this deals 2 damage to target opponent or planeswalker. Okay. And then chapter 3 is the next giant spell you cast this turn costs 2 less to cast.
Okay.
So it reduces Primetime's cost. It gives you some value. It scries. I think this is gonna be nice.
Yeah, it's good in Team Escape Shift. You can also do some like random Blood Moony things and like play Inferno and Frost Titan.
Yeah.
And like have just like you can tie up their mana, or you can just like mow down their creatures if that's something you need to do. This card just seems very good. I think it's good for. I just don't think they're good enough giants in Historic, but I think this is good enough for Modern. Yeah.
Okay, just a couple more in gold. Next is, by the way, I should say that I am picking that one for Modern, but not in Historic. Next one is Coma Cosmos Serpent. It's 3 green, blue for a 6/6 legendary creature serpent. Can't be countered. At the beginning of each upkeep, create a 3/3 blue serpent creature token named Coma's Coil. Sacrifice another serpent, choose one, tap target permanent. Its activated abilities can't be activated this turn. Or Coma gains indestructible until end of turn.
Why are we talking about this card? It's terrible.
I mean, it costs a lot of mana, but it's really powerful.
But it costs too many mana.
Yeah, it costs 7. I mean, I just thought we needed to talk about all Mythic Simic cards in these sets. But yeah, we can move on if you don't think it's going to be played. I thought there's a chance for Historic.
It's cool
for
Commander. It's super cool for Commander. But no, I don't think... If this costs 6, I would be on board. If it was 2 green, blue, I'd be on board. 7 is just so many.
Yeah, I mean, there are certainly decks where it just like doesn't matter how much mana you're paying for a spell, but then are there better things to do? And probably there are Eldrazi. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Nico Eris, X white, blue for a 3 loyalty planeswalker, enters the battlefield, create X shard tokens. That is not shard, it is shard. And they are enchantments with 2, sacrifice this enchantment, scry 1, then draw a card. They're like super clues. +1 up to 1 target creature you control can't be blocked this turn. Whenever that creature deals damage this turn, return it to its owner's hand. -1, Nico deals 2 damage to target tapped creature for each card you've drawn this turn. And -1, create a shard token.
Man, if that +1 did something like anything else, this would be a very good control planeswalker.
Like, I mean, it needs very, some creatures good. For the -1 to matter. It's like, where does this belong? It's really hard to evaluate blue planeswalkers that like have like creature stuff, and they don't see a lot of play typically. But usually,
it's just the +1 that doesn't make sense. Both of the -1s would be great for control. It's just like the +1 that's just like you.
Yeah,
you don't fit
one,
here.
Right,
you don't fit here. Because like pay 5, make 2 super clues. And then minus make a super clue, and your opponent, like, so you have three cantrips in play, and your opponent wasted like a lightning bolt on this thing that's great. Or just like kill a guy because you drew a card this turn, like, yeah, that's great too. Like, or like, you know, make a shard, break it open, deal 4 to something is good. Like, all this stuff is good. But just the +1 just is, you have no reason to get loyalty counters on this planeswalker. So for that reason, I just don't think it's playable.
Yeah, it's hard to take it up. There's just such a wealth of like banned playable planeswalkers for creatures decks, and this isn't the one. Yeah. So skip it. Okay, the last one for gold is the Raven's Warning. I think this one's got a shot. 1 white, blue for a saga, once again. Chapter 1, create a 1/1 blue bird token with flying. You gain 2 life. Chapter 2, whenever one or more creatures with flying deal combat damage to a player this turn, look at that player's hand and draw a card. Chapter 3, you may put a card you own from outside the game on top of your library. This is a hell of a lot of value for 3 mana.
This is a straight up good card.
Yeah. Pair this with Lingering Souls, you know? I mean, just something simple like that is good. But in like a deck that already is just like stacked with flyers, like Blue-White Spirits, sideboard, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just playable in a control deck, right? So like, in a control deck, it's just like, make a bird, get a chance to look at your opponent's hand and draw a card, and if you don't, then they spent their rule spell on your bird. And then you just get the demonic tutor to your sideboard every game.
Yeah.
Like, that seems really good.
Yep, no doubt.
I think this is playable in Historic for sure. I'll take it in Modern, too. I'm willing. This is my risk it for the biscuit card for Modern. I think this card is really good.
Yeah, I picked it in both formats as well.
Yeah, this is surprisingly good, I think. Yeah.
Okay, we're almost there. Home stretch. So next up, we're going on to Artifact now. And then it's Pyre. What?
I was looking at Showdown of the Skulls.
That one's okay. I figured we didn't really need to talk about that one, but
too many mana for four cards.
Pyre of Heroes, is the 2-mana artifact. It says 2-tap, sacrifice a creature, search a library for a creature card that shares a type with it, with converted mana cost 1 plus the creature's converted mana cost, put on the battlefield, shuffle your library. Activate
Birthing Pod for tribal decks.
Yeah. I'm picking this in both formats, and we discussed why on the previous cast.
Yeah, Goblins is a deck that can cheat, so Pyre of Heroes, please play.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, I think people are just always looking for cards like this to test out, so I think I've got people, that on my side.
People like Birthing Pod, absolutely.
But yeah, it's good. And we talked about all of the humans in the Kitchen Finks combo deck, or the Vizier combo deck, so there's some potential for that, the druids and the humans and things like that, so there's a lot of stuff happening there. Okay, the other artifact is Weathered Runestone, 2-mana for an artifact, it's an uncommon. Non-land permanent cards in graveyards and libraries can't enter the battlefield, and players can't cast spells from graveyards or libraries.
Card's very good. Both formats.
Yeah. Is it, like, better than Gravedigger's Cage? Good?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's 2-mana, though.
It's 100% better than Gravedigger's Cage.
Okay.
Because it turns off all non-land permanents.
Yep.
And creatures couldn't enter... But you could like reanimate artifacts and enchantments. So like, I guess there are corner cases that this is not it's better for. So I guess maybe it's not better than Cage because it's 2-mana. It gets around Chalice of the Void. I don't know. Like, I think this is just good enough.
That's why I like it for both formats. Or at least I like it for Modern because Eldrazi Tron plays Chalice and is going to want this option in the sideboard.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's dope.
So you got Tormods for 0 and then Weathered Runestone for 2. I think you want both of them.
Yeah, I think that's dope. Yeah.
Okay, so lands. Obviously, we're going to pick the flip lands, both of us for both formats. Yep. I think that paid off last
time. I am going to pick the snow lands for Modern. The snow duel lands.
Snow duels for Modern. Okay. All right. Snow duels. I'll jump on that train, too.
I don't think for Historic, because we don't have fetch lands in Historic. Yeah. They can fetch the fetchable types. But for Modern, that's kind of like this, the base of this snow deck we were talking about with Jorn. Is like, you don't have to play Hollowed Fountain. You can play the snow duel and have it do what Hollowed Fountain does most game and come and play, or sorry, Hollowed Fountain, like Breeding Pool, and have it come and play tapped on turn 1. It still powers up your Ice Fang Codals because it's a snow permanent. You can still get it back with your fancy scepter thing on the backside of Jorn, and it untaps when you attack with Jorn. So like, if there's a snow deck, it looks like it's got those plus snow basics as a base.
Yep. And Faceless Haven I will take in both formats as well. I think that is super strong.
The colorless mana source, not particularly exciting, but snow, like just having a 3-mana 4/3, pretty good. So yeah. I think it's playable in both formats.
It's harder to do in Historic than it is in Modern, so I'm a little concerned about it there, but I think it's probably their decks that are just going to make it. Right. They're going to force it.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I put the World Tree on here, but I don't know. Is it World Tree comes into play tapped. It's a rare. Adds green. As long as you control 6 or more lands add 1 mana of any color. You can pay Wooburg, 2 of every color. Tap, sacrifice World Tree, search library for any number of god cards and put them onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
So if they hadn't banned, I mean, I'm just going to make the statement. If they hadn't banned Field of the Dead, this card would be insane. Because you just kind of put this in your Primeval Titan package. You automatically fix your mana because you're going to have more than six lands in play. And, like your deck is just built to put lands in play. So, like, all your kind of crappy colorless lands now tap for mana to, like, fix and cast your spells. But you're never doing the double Wooburg search because the god cards are terrible. So, like, this is a bad forest with now bad ability because you don't need to fix your mana off a bunch of lands. Yeah. So I don't think this is playable.
Yeah, I feel like it probably is playable personally, and I'm too dumb to figure out why or how, but I'll pick it for modern.
You pick it for modern. I don't know the combination of gods to make the bottom line of text ever relevant.
No, that's not why. I think it's the second one. The adds, you know, whatever
that's,
color.
That's one of any color.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have to have six lands? By the time you have six lands, you really need to add one mana of any color? Like, you really need the mana fixing?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. Maybe it's a Golos thing. Maybe it's like Golos and Tron finds this card. But there's already that indestructible land, isn't there?
Cascading Cataracts.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, that's probably better. Okay, anyways, that brings us to the end for today. We did it. We made it. We made it through.
Hurrah! I'm going to actually start trying to work on that Jorn deck now that I just brought it up.
Yeah.
Because that does sound kind of dope. I just have to see if there's any other good snow permanents that, like, you can put into play off of Jorn.
Yeah, Daryl, you playing beer pong over there?
Oh, no, I got it. Sorry, I'm bouncing over. That's my desk.
Okay, yeah.
I'm fidgeting, sorry.
You share that Jorn deck because I'm interested to hear how that that comes out. I have to try it out myself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to sit down and start working on it. I don't know if I'm going to have a full, like, fully built thing, but, like,
nope, I'll give it a spin. That's your homework. That's your homework. So I'll see you in 2 weeks, and I'm looking forward to hearing about your Jorn deck.
Looking forward to hearing about a Jorn deck? Oh, man, that's tough.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, and catch you next time.
Thank you.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardnock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Cardnock Life content.